something that should make us glad if we are the Lord's people. The fact that Jesus says suffering and sorrow will end. We won't know sadness when Jesus returns. That should make us glad. Our souls being reunited with our bodies, again, something that should make us glad. But equally, perhaps you're thinking of the other side of the coin and going, well, there's sadness involved here too. What about my friends or my family or my work colleagues who don't know Jesus and don't accept his invitation to come and join his kingdom? What about them? They won't be part of the new kingdom, the new creation. That's sad. That makes me sad. I don't want Jesus to return. Maybe that's what you're thinking. Or maybe the sadness is a bit more self-centered, if we're honest. You know, I quite like my creature comforts here in Bedford. You know, we've got a gale blowing outside, but inside we're okay. We can go back to our homes and we can put the heating on if we're cold. We can go to our fridges and get what we want. We've got our televisions. We've got our computer. We've got everything we could possibly want. And Jesus, I don't really know if I want you to interrupt my comfortable life, please. Or if you could put it off until such and such a date in the calendar, that would be quite nice as well, actually. So maybe selfishly we're sad at the idea that Jesus might return. But maybe it's neither sad or glad, but anger. How could Jesus, so gentle and lowly, loving, kind, how could the most approachable person of all time say such things as he does in this section? How could he say, for example, in verse 27 and verse 29, that this will be a day of destruction? Jesus, no. That's not acceptable. Gentle, humble, kind. Yeah, good, I love that. But let's not have anything about a day of destruction. That's not the Jesus I want to worship. And so we're angry. You know, my lovely work colleagues, my kind family, who are so lovely. Jesus, you couldn't separate me from them. No, Jesus, actually, I'm not up for this, you returning and being who you claim to be. I'll have a Jesus in my likeness, please, not me being conformed to his likeness. It's not fair, perhaps you say. It's not fair that Jesus should do this. If you've got children at the minute, or you can remember back to those days where you raised your children, that statement, it's not fair, is pretty common, isn't it? It can come over the most trivial things, dinner time and the vegetables. Son, would you eat your vegetables? No. It's not fair that I should have to eat vegetables. Maybe as a parent you then try and reason with your child. Son, it's good for you. It's not fair. Now the good parent at that point doesn't go, actually, son, you're right. It's not fair. It's a horrific injustice. I'll take them and don't worry. No, that's not good parenting, is it? Say, no, I'm older. I'm wiser. I know better. Eat your vegetables and keep quiet. So it is with Jesus. He is better. He knows better. He is far wiser than us. We perhaps need to remove ourselves from being the self-righteous judge about who should and shouldn't be part of his kingdom in the future and go, okay, Jesus, I get it. This is tough. This is hard for me to swallow. But I do trust you that you know better, that you're wiser and that you're righteous and that you're good and that you're perfect and you will make the right choices. That's the position of faith, where we accept Jesus' word, not place ourselves above him and his word. Because after all, as Jesus has been telling us throughout this whole section of Luke, he is the king. He is God's ultimate final king who has come to bring God's good and just rule to bear on earth. He's come to reverse all the wrongs and to make it right. So really, we're not in a position to put ourselves above him, are we? And we've seen already 2 weeks ago, if you remember from verses 20 to 25 of Luke 17, that the kingdom has already dawned upon us. Quietly, yes. Just like the sun gradually rises in winter over the horizon. So Jesus' kingdom has already dawned because he, the king, is dwelling among them. As he says in verse 21, the kingdom is among you because the king himself has arrived. So he says the kingdom has arrived, but also the kingdom has yet to arrive in its fullness, in its perfect state. We still have suffering, don't we? We still have sorrow. We still have sin. But the day will come, Jesus says, well, that will not be part of the kingdom. And he says, you'll know when it comes because it will be like the lightning in the sky. The lightning that lights up, that illuminates the entire sky. That's what it'll be like, Jesus says, when he returns and brings in the kingdom in its fullness. Everybody will see it. Northern hemisphere, southern hemisphere, eastern hemisphere, western hemisphere, daytime, nighttime, we will all see Jesus' return. That's what we've already seen in verses 20 to 25. And now in this section that we've just had read, Jesus kind of moves on and says, well, what will happen on that day? On that day when I come back, the day of the Son of Man, what will it be like? And then he also says, well, how about now? How should you live now, knowing that day is to come? So two questions. You got it? What's number one? What will the day be like? Number two? How should we live now? Okay, so two people are listening. Let's try a bit more. First question? Try again. Number one? Hey, good. Number two? How should we live now? Okay, let's look at that first question first, because that's what Jesus deals with. Verses 26 to 30, his overriding point is that it will be a day of destruction. That's pretty hard-hitting, let's be honest. The day when Jesus returns, he says, verse 26 to 30, will be a day of destruction. And you see that Jesus gives us two pictures. He takes us back to two Old Testament stories and people. Noah, the boat builder. Lot, the dweller in dangerous places. Noah, the boat builder. Lot, the dweller in dangerous places. And look at verse 27 and verse 28, if you will. And just notice what people will be doing right up until the time when Jesus comes back. Do you see it? Look down. What do you see? Don't look at me. Look at the word. What does it say will be happening? Eating, drinking, marrying, planting, building. Just like it was in Noah's day and in Lot's day. So in Noah's day, people were going down the local Wetherspoons and having a drink and having a meal. People were going down on one knee and proposing in marriage. And then 6 months later, everyone was talking to each other.
they were going to the allotment. They were using the winter to dig up the ground. They were then planting in spring. They were buying on Amazon. But before the house was finally built and finished, before the crops had come up in summer, before Amazon Prime had delivered the next day, sulfur rained down from the skies. And destruction came upon all who were left in Sodom. It's grim, isn't it? And Jesus says that's what it will be like on the day that he returns. It will be grim. But judgment is a grim topic. But we've got to preach it because it's what Jesus says will happen. Ben, can I have the picture of Pompeii, please? Back one. There we go. If you like history or geography, these pictures might be familiar with you. The eruption in Italy of Mount Vesuvius, AD 79. Huge volcanic eruption, ash clouds blowing up, pyroclastic flows rolling across the Bay of Naples. And suddenly, Pompeii, Herculaneum, destroyed. And they've dug up, you know, the archaeologists have dug up, and this is what they found. People buried alive in the ash, in the sulfur ash from the volcano. Like that, destruction came upon the people. When they were least expecting it, when they were doing their ordinary daily business, destruction came. Can we begin to get a glimpse of what this day will be like? I know I'm pushing into it a lot, but I think we've got to, haven't we? So we grasp something of what this is going to be like for people. But people were and are deaf to the warnings. They don't believe it. Life will just carry on as normal, they say. Maybe the sun will one day explode, but not in my lifetime, so I'm okay. But this is reality. This is what Jesus says. Which means, as an implication, that as we go between now and the day of Jesus' return, whenever that might be, and it may be tomorrow, we're not going to see a worldwide increase in salvation on a global, on a kind of revival-like level, you might say. The world is not going to be becoming a gradually more Christian place as the days go on. We're not going to be seeing people from all over the world, every single tribe and tongue, every day repenting and believing. The world will not be a Christian world when Jesus comes back, is what he's saying. People will continue to ignore the warnings, and then destruction will come upon those who've refused to accept Jesus' invitation. It's what he's saying. So it will be a day of destruction. But secondly, Jesus says in verses 34 to 37, it will be a day of separation. Do you see the two pictures that Jesus gives in verse 34 to 37? He speaks about the family home, and then he speaks about the workplace. He says, in the family home, there'll be a husband and a wife in the same bed. And then when Jesus returns, there'll be a separation. And then he goes to the workplace and says, two people, two work colleagues will be grinding flour at the mill. One will be taken, one will be left. Two people will be in the office tomorrow. One will be taken, one will be left. Two people in the same classroom, one will be taken, one will be left. Do you get the point? Jesus says this will be a day of separation. But this is where we've got to ignore contemporary thinking, or even sadly, contemporary American Christian thinking. This is not the Christian will be taken up to the sky, off into heaven somewhere, floating in clouds,
while everyone else who's not a Christian will be left down below. That's not what Jesus is on about here. No, Jesus' future, the day of the Son of Man that he's talking about, that's a day for earth. This is the day of the renewal of the kingdom, the new creation. The Christians are the one who are staying here. And we will live in our resurrection bodies, in our glorified state here on earth. We will receive the fullness of kingdom life, while those who have not accepted Jesus' invitation will receive the fullness of death, eternal separation from the Lord. This is not about being raptured off somewhere. It's very much grounded on planet Earth. And on that day, there will be no negotiations with Jesus. You won't say to Jesus, "Jesus, do you know what? I was going to follow you tomorrow. I got it in my... Look, Jesus, here's my Google Calendar. You can see 9 o'clock Monday morning. Must learn to follow Jesus." But he came on Sunday. There will be no negotiations. There will be no, "I got it to do when I'm retired," or "once I've enjoyed my life, then I'll consider..." There's none of that. The day that Jesus returns will be the day of separation. No negotiations. Nor is there safety by association. We won't do, "Well, I knew such and such a person," or "my wife was a Christian." Because Jesus takes us to the marriage bed, doesn't he? And says the husband and the wife, the Christian, the non-Christian, are separated there and then. We can't say, "Well, in my workplace I knew a Christian." Because go back to Noah's day for a moment. I don't know, hundreds, thousands, maybe more, millions of people knew Noah was a Christian because they saw him building the boats. But how many people outside of Noah's family entered the ark? How many?
None.
Safety by association is not possible. Once the ark door was shut, the separation happened. Once the sulfur started coming down out of the sky of Sodom, separation happened. It's hard to swallow, isn't it? Is this the same Jesus, maybe you're saying to yourself, that is so gentle and lowly, kind and patient? But again, we've got to put ourselves under Jesus' word, not above it. We are subjects of the King, not rulers of the King. The same Jesus who says, "I am gentle and lowly, I'm approachable, come to me, all who are weary," is the same Jesus who says, "It's a day of destruction and separation." So we've seen so far, haven't we, that first question. What was the first question we were going to look at? What will it be like? And the grim reality is it's a day of destruction and separation. And then the second question, how then should we live? And that's really this middle section that we've got here. Look at verse 31 to 34. Pat, would you just reread that to us?
"On that day, no one who is on the roof of this house with his goods inside should go down to get them. Likewise, no one in the field should go back for anything. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever tries to keep his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. I tell you, on that night, two people will be in one bed. One will be taken and the other left."
Thank you. So I want to give you two D words to try and remember, right? To try and help. How should we live now? And the first D word is detachment. Detachment. Detach yourself from the things of this world. Verse 32. Remember who?
Lot's wife.
Lot's wife, as she was leaving Sodom, semi against her will, because the whole family had to be kind of dragged out, she stopped and she looked back at Sodom. Looking back in a sad way, looking back in a way that I'm really sad to have to leave this place that I loved so much. Sad that she's missing the Vegas-like casinos or the Amsterdam-like brothels or living for payday from one day to the next. You see, while she'd been physically removed from Sodom, her heart and her affections were truly still there. Her looking back is one of sadness. But that looking back was the last thing she did, because that's what happened to her. In an instant, she was turned to a pillar of salt. She didn't detach herself from the world. She was far too engrossed in it. You know, she looked the genuine article. She was a Bible-carrying, church-going Christian, everybody thought. She was married to a Christian, to Lot. And yet, when the crunch moment came, her true colours were shown. She loved the world and the things in it far more than the Lord and the escape and the life that had been planned for her and for the family. She wasn't willing to detach herself and truly follow God. Maybe you go, that's not me. I'm not one given over to open sin. Whew, good, I can go back to sleep. Okay, sure, it may not be you. But maybe actually the thing for you that stops you thinking about Jesus' return and the realities of the kingdom is not the open sin, but it's just simply the distractions. Go back to where Jesus began. What were people doing in Lot's day? What were people doing in Noah's day? What were they doing?
Normal life.
Thank you, Pat. They were getting up in the morning. They were having breakfast. They were getting ready for the school run. They were getting ready for work. They came back after work and they put their feet up after having cooked dinner and washed the dishes. And then they repeated the same thing the next day. So engrossed with ordinary life that they distracted themselves from the bigger picture, that Jesus was going to return. Sorry, that Jesus will return. We'll go back home, won't we? We'll cook the Sunday lunch. We'll do the dishes. Maybe we'll have an afternoon rest. And we'll actually forget. The frenzied busyness of life stops us remembering that Jesus is going to return. And it can be true in your retirement as well. It amazes me as I chat to some of you who are in the retirement stage of life, how busy life is. Well, that's not a criticism. We can be so busy, even in meetings, even in church meetings, that we can stop to forget Jesus is coming back. Which sounds rather ironic, doesn't it? But that's what our life can be like. Can I have the next slide, please, Ben? Here's a quote from old Bishop Ryle. "It's not enough for us to do as others do, as if we were born for nothing else. Our exclusive attention to the things of this world can ruin us as much as open sin." Just chew on that for 30 seconds. Just read that for yourself. We need to detach ourselves, don't we? We need to start each day and remember at different stages each day, hang on, I'm not of this world. I belong to Jesus. I belong to the kingdom that will one day come on earth in its fullness when he returns. Praise God that he's returning. So detachment, that's our first way of living in this life. The second D word I want you to remember is delay. You all say delay?
Delay.
What are our two D's?
Delay.
And the delay is Jesus' return. It is a good thing for all of us that Jesus has not yet returned. If we're not yet a Christian, it's a brilliant thing that Jesus has not returned, because today is a day of opportunity for you. Jesus, who is both gentle and lowly, patient and kind, but perfectly holy and will bring destruction and separation, invites you to enter his kingdom today, to bow the knee to King Jesus, to put yourself under him, not above him. That's what today brings for you. It's a day where we can accept the invitation. But maybe you already have, maybe you're a Christian. So let me ask you a question. Who has the responsibility today to warn non-Christians that this day is coming? Who has the responsibility? Thank you, David. Each one of us. It's the church's responsibility collectively to warn people. Let me give you a second question. What time of year in our culture is most suitable for telling people about Jesus? Yeah, but what particular time of year? Christmas. Even the atheists love Jesus in a manger. The atheists, the ones who don't believe in Jesus. So when we put that it's our responsibility and that Christmas is the best season for doing it, now tell me what month we're in.
November.
What's next month? Do you get the point? We've got a responsibility. Let me tell you about our old next-door neighbour, Neil, because I think Neil is a classic example of someone who just sat on the fence at this time. He'd heard lots about Jesus, but whether he truly made the decision, I'll never know. So Neil was a big guy, a Cook Island Maori fella. If anyone's been watching any of the rugby the last few weeks, Paul and I were having a great laugh last night watching some of these Fijians just charging straight into these Irish guys who were going backwards. The score is irrelevant, but that was fun, right? Our neighbour was like that. He was a gang leader. He'd got Black Power tattooed across his chest. And in the early years of our time with him as our next-door neighbour, he was in and out of prison for doing things that the police didn't like to fellow gangs. But he managed to negotiate early release a number of times on the basis that he would do community service. And for him, community service was coming to church to put out the chairs in the morning. Right? And he'd sit and be part of us, and he'd hear the message. Fully respectful of Jesus and of church. We were safe where we were living, because we were, in some sense, under his wing, because we were part of the church. And life carried on as normal for Neil. And in his latter years, you know, when he wasn't in prison, he became something of a reformed character. He held down a steady job. And then one day he was just out on his bike when he had a huge heart attack while driving his bike. And for Neil, that was his end. I don't know whether Neil ever got off the fence, whether he truly accepted Jesus. But friends, today we have the opportunity to come off the fence or to recommit ourselves to Jesus and the delay, which is the opportunity for us to repent and truly commit to him and to his kingdom. Jesus' delay is a good thing. So let's go back to the question we started with. Will you be sad or glad when Jesus returns? And I think the answer to that question depends on who you think Jesus is today and whether you're willing to put yourself under his authority and not place yourself above him. Let's pray.